Oh, he's back, ladies and gentlemen, and we got it for the full 2 hours every Tuesday going forward for the rest of the football season. Jeff Loggeman in studio, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on a Tuesday, brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com, and Dan Hicken did get right to the heart of the matter in terms of the question of the day. You can weigh in on Twitter, at MD_1010XL, at Logs56, and at 1010XL Fat Tony. And we ask you today, who's the most underrated Jaguar of all time? That won't dominate our conversation, Jeff. We got a lot of football breakdown to get to.
Yeah, but I'll throw my two cents in.
Please do.
I think, you know, right there, Brian Sexton talked about one of the guys that's got to be at the top of my list, and that is Darryl Smith.
Still going strong.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think he's underappreciated. I think he was underappreciated by the fan base. I think he was underappreciated by some of the personnel people that have been through here and that are still here.
I think Dave Caldwell admitted it's
the
biggest mistake he made was letting this guy go.
They know it.
Would have been playing.
But, you know, what they were looking at was age and, you know, in history, and some guys are defy it, you know, and Darryl Smith is one of those guys that just defied it. And so I don't see how you could not put him at the top. Rob Meyer is a guy that we talked about before we went on the air. Rob was a quiet guy, you know, never said much in the locker room to the media or anything like that. But Rob Meyer was kind of the forgotten part of the Twin Towers in the middle of John Henderson and Marcus Stroud.
A trio of towers.
Yeah. He might have been the best pass rusher out of all of them. I mean, if you look at the numbers, that's what they would say.
Right.
You know, and Rob was.
I would think the attention paid to those other guys probably helped him in that department a little bit, too.
Somewhat. Somewhat, but you know, each guy has to make his own way.
Sure.
You know, and Rob Meyer made his own way.
Seventh round pick, man, and played for a long time here.
Excellent football player, excellent guy. It's actually every year we have alumni weekend and Rob comes back and he's still the same old Rob. Barely says two things.
Right.
You know, but you love the guy because he is a nice guy.
Good teammate, good
guy. I
know
you got the list up there in front of you somewhere, Mike. I'm guessing all three of those guys are top 10 all time for the Jags in sacks.
In terms of sacks, let's see. We'll give you the top 10 in descending order. Number 10 is Darryl Smith. All right, pretty good. Number 9, Rob Meyer. Very nice. Then you got Stroud. Bobby McCray actually coming in at 7.
Their last double-digit guy.
Yeah, Gary Walker at 6. G-Funk. Spice.
G-Funk was a unique guy now. He was a very unique guy. His bark was louder than his bite. And, man, Gary loved to talk.
Yeah.
Loved to talk.
22 and a half sacks in 3 years. Pretty good production
good
out of that guy.
Really good
play. Spice came in at number 5. Paul Spicer. Happy birthday, young man.
Happy birthday, Spice.
Kevin Hardy coming in at number 4.
Paul Spicer might be one of my top 5 favorite Jaguars of all time.
Me too.
Just because of the way he played the game, how he had to fight to carve out a career in the National Football League, the way he went about his business. I'm a big fan of how guys played the game. Paul Spicer played the game the way it was meant to be played.
And what a great, from my standpoint, what a great personality.
Yeah.
Just what a great quote. And
the older he got, he had the greatest nickname ever. Old Spice.
Old Spice.
Yeah.
Exactly. Made perfect sense. He was, and Jeff, I said it many times over the years, he was my number one go-to guy during his time here. First guy you'd go to after the game because he hadn't calmed down.
It's like going to the barbershop.
Yeah, 15 minutes was not enough to calm Paul Spicer down. So that little window, I'd go right in. You just duck into the locker room, and he had that little locker right off to the right corner right there, and you went to Spice, and he was still wound up, and you get him to say anything at that point. He was number 5. You had Hardy at 4. John Henderson at 2, or at 3. Schmange at 2, and Tony Brackens, of course, your number one pass rusher, sack master.
Well, probably the greatest, Tony Brackens, the greatest physical specimen maybe that I have ever played with. I mean, the guy was incredibly strong, gifted. I would have loved to have seen Tony Brackens, the body, play with a Hall of Fame mind. Tony Brackens was one of those guys that, you know, he worked a little hard sometimes.
Got by on a lot of natural ability.
If he was, you know, I had the good fortune of playing with, you know, Ronnie Lott and Art Monk and some other guys that were, you know, Hall of Fame caliber guys. And Tony had Hall of Fame talent. And I think if he was a little more serious about his trade, there's no telling what he could have done.
55 sacks all time dwarfs anybody else in a Jaguar uniform. It's hard to believe no one else has 35 sacks.
He's the strongest human being that I've ever gone against in practice.
Give us any good. You have a one good eyewitness example of him.
Oh yeah, The first day ever in pads. You know, me and Clyde Simmons. You know, the two veteran guys, and we've got this young draft pick from Texas, and you know, John Pease. You know, said, hey, look, you know, want you two guys to kind of take him under your wing and help him grow. Which, you know, we would have done anyway. We didn't have to be asked that.
Sure.
And the first day in pads, you know, I grabbed Tony, you know, to pair up for what we called pace party, which is, you know, I'm an offensive lineman, he's a defensive lineman, then he flip-flop. And it's just working hands, it's working, you know, the steps with your feet and coming off and making contact. It, you know, it's just a individual period drill. And so I got Tony, and I'm the offensive lineman, he's the defensive lineman. And John Pease, hut, you know, and he comes off and he hits me and he knocked the wind almost completely out of me. And I was going, oh my God. And I after the drill, we're kind of jogging to the next drill and, you know, running with Clyde. And I went, Clyde, I said, tomorrow you can have him.
Yeah, we could switch.
I said, because I want you to feel what I just felt. I mean, it was one of those things that's just an eye-opener.
And he wasn't going any harder than you guys typically do. It was just the brute strength.
Just the brute strength that he had. And there was one other time that I actually had that happen. And it was in college, and it was against a guy by the name of John Burns, and we used to call him John Trash Can Burns because he had the body like a trash can. It was dumpy. But he had the ability to deliver power in a short area that was just comparable to none. And when I was a freshman at college, John Trash Can Burns came on a counter when I was a middle linebacker, and I didn't see it coming, and he hit me right in the side, and he delivered the blow right basically at the bottom of the ribs, and it took me about 5 minutes to catch my breath.
Who knew John Trashcan Burns would make the program this morning? That's what you get. We've missed you, Loggy.
And John Trashcan Burns was actually, we in college, we actually had a kind of an understanding that John was kind of a package deal with, I believe his name was Antonio Rice, who was a much heralded running back coming out of the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area at that time. And John and Antonio Rice were good friends, and we always thought that the two of them were a package deal to get Antonio at University of Virginia.
Right.
But I found out soon enough that John Trashcan Burns was there in his own right after I took that hit.
Yeah. Did you anybody coattail on Jeff Logman? Did anybody get the benefit of the package deal?
No, I was not worth it. Trust me.
Get out of here.
When you
get
recruited by Duke and Georgia Tech and you know, William & Mary and Richmond.
Who was number one on the list of the most successful athletes from your area? You remember that? We talked about that story last year. Somebody put out you were number
top
two.
Top 10.
You were number two on the whole list.
Well, I mean,
I was in the county.
I was in the county that I was from.
Yeah. You know,
so
it's pretty big.
Yeah, we had some good ones. I mean, Alan Pinkett was probably the most, you know, the one that had the most notoriety.
Right.
Because he went to Notre Dame. He was a Heisman candidate, went on to a pro career with the Houston Oilers. He actually played with my brother. You know, and my brother and him were the two high school studs when I was a freshman. You know, they were seniors. I was a freshman. We had some good athletes come out of Loudoun County. You know, Billy King, who was the ACC Defensive Player of the Year two times, played during the Mike Krzyzewski era early on, and went on to become the general manager of Philadelphia 76ers. And I'm trying to think of the
long time GM.
Yeah, he was there for a long time. And so Billy, at that time, Billy was the most, you know, probably the biggest name in our area by far. And the best part was Billy and I wore about the same shoe size. And so when the University of Maryland used to send him shoes illegally, you know, Lefty Driesell back in those days, I would always get free tennis shoes from Billy.
Nice.
Great.
A little Jeff Logan was on scholarship at multiple places, and you didn't even know it. We ran through the top 10 pass rusher sack guys all time for the Jags. Who's the best candidate? Who's most likely guy to lead the team this year?
You know, this is not really, there's no one dominant pass rusher on this defense because Sendarks Marks is injured. Now, it's got to be a group effort, you know, but I mean, Ryan Davis, I think, is going to put up comparable numbers to what he had last year. I think Clemens is going to be in the same ballpark. You know, what they need is somebody else to step up, and hopefully that's, you know, an Andre Branch type of a guy. Hopefully, Jared Oldrick will provide some numbers that maybe you're going to lose from Sendarek Marks, you know, not being available maybe at the beginning of the season, you know, but this is going to be a group effort. Dan Scuda hopefully will provide, you know, a little bit of a boost as well from the auto position. But, you know, they want to get that one dominant guy, and you know they drafted him.
They hope they had
Dante Fowler, but then you know he's hurt and he tore his ACL, so he's not going to be available. So it's got to be a group effort. And hopefully, with a secondary that has improved this year, it will help out the front. And I'm a big believer that that's probably the most competitive group that there is. You'd like to not have it be competitive to where you have clear-cut guys that are head and shoulders above the others, which means you have, you know, star players, but right now you don't. I think Aaron Colvin is starting to make a niche for himself, and I said it right here, you know, that Aaron Colvin, I thought that this year would be a starter at a corner position, and right now that's where he's at.
That's the way it's looking, and both two corner and, you know, base and nickel packages. It looks like he's heading in that direction.
Very mature player for his age. Great awareness. Great competitor, and it's not easy for a guy to flip from inside to outside and to change that mindset, because it really is a different mindset. But I think that's it's a great compliment to him that they have confidence that he can handle that, and then his maturity level is such, you know. So I'm a big Aaron Colvin fan. Big Aaron Colvin fan.
We're big fans of Jeff Loggeman around here. We're glad you're back, and we've got you for the next 2 hours. We will look back at preseason game number one for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Look ahead just a little bit as well as to what you're hoping to see this week against the New York Giants, and we'll take calls all for the next 2 hours at 641-1010. You can also text us at that number on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. We gave you the Twitter handles out there. The question of the day is simply, who is the most underrated Jaguar of all time? You can text me, tweet me, and put on Facebook as well questions for Jeff if you want to get them in that way, or just call into the program at 641-1010. We'll be going through the good and the bad of what happened in the Jags' 23-21 victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers on Friday night. Jeff Loggeman in studio. Fat Tony here with me. I'm Mike Dempsey. It's a Tuesday brought to you by Kenny Lay & Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Jaguars Today kicking off right now on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, Jaguars Today kicking off on this Tuesday, brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and he's back, Jeff Loggeman, fresh out of the film room, ready to take your calls, ready to break down the tape, and we'll do it every Tuesday all throughout the season as we did last year. So, Jeff, let's get to the good. Let's start with the good, the obvious good. You know, and I do acknowledge you watch it, and even if I watch the same tape as you, I wouldn't know to look for all the same things that you certainly know to look for. But it was pretty plain to see from anybody that Blake Bortles had an excellent performance his first time out.
Sure.
You know, when you factor in the drops, he was practically flawless, had the one bit of an overthrow. But outside of that, just start with what you're seeing from him. It's not so much about the numbers that he put up in the first preseason game, but the way he looked to you compared to where he was at this point last year.
Biggest thing, I think, is the command of the offense and the confidence with his eyes. You know, when you watch him drop back, instead of the head going left, right, left, right, left, right, it's going left, and then it's going right, and then a decision is made. You know, and I think that's, you know, when Gus Bradley and Greg Olsen talk about owning their offense, that's what they're talking about, is a true understanding of what the routes are, what the route trees are, what the reads are, and then delivering the ball in a timely fashion. And you can see that the confidence that he's starting to gain is much better than what it was last year. The pocket presence is something that he's got. You know, last year, even though the head was going left, right, left, right, left, right, trying to figure out where the hell do I go with the ball, he still had pocket presence. And that's something that, you know, I think through the years I've learned, you just can't teach. You know, we were just talking about Blaine Gabbert in the break. I mean, Blaine Gabbert has one of the most talented arms I've ever seen, but it doesn't have the pocket presence or the awareness to be able to keep his eyes disciplined down the field and to move the body without actually looking at where he needs to be. Blake Bortles just feels it. Dan Marino felt it. John Elway felt it. I mean, the really great quarterbacks and good quarterbacks have an innate ability to where it just happens. They don't even think about it. And that's something I think is very impressive with Blake. You know, the third and 14 that I showed last night on Jaguars All Access on Channel 4, a little cheap plug there, was to where the protection was good, but he slid to find the window to make that throw to Allen Robinson. And that's what it's all about for a quarterback. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is probably one of the best at it in today. Tom Brady is also one of the best at it. Peyton Manning is one of the best at it. You know, to be a great quarterback, you got to have it, and he's got it. And so, real positive. You know, the balls are tighter. You know, last year we saw the old Billy Kilmers, you know, which I'm probably dating myself there,
You are.
And a lot of people are, the younger generation is going, who the hell is Billy Kilmer? I mean, Billy Kilmer used to throw balls where it was just wobbling. You know, the old ducks, you know, we used to call ducks in high school. And the ball's tighter. It's more accurate. The routine throws are starting to look routine. You know, but I don't want to overreact. I mean, it was a good start.
Absolutely.
A really good start and a lot of positive things. And look, you know, when you're talking about spending that high of a pick and, you know, the future of the franchise, you know, kind of lies in that position, you know, it was, that's a good feeling to have.
And that's the thing about the preseason. We talked about it yesterday, Tony, that you don't want to overreact, but you don't want to not react either. They're going out there. They're playing for a reason, right? And you want to see them perform well. And you could say, well, Pittsburgh's not game planning. Okay, but how much worse would you feel then if Blake was, you know, 7-for-20 passing, mm-hmm. right? So take advantage of the opportunities that present themselves, and I think he did.
Yeah, feel good about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good reason. You know, when I finished the game up, you know, on the drive home, you go, you know, that felt really good, you know. And a lot of times when it feels really good, you go to watch the tape and you're like, yeah, you know, it doesn't look as good as what it felt. Or you leave a game and you go, that just felt bad. And then you watch the film and you go, you know what, that wasn't as bad as I thought. You know, and this is one of the games which it rarely happens to where you feel good about it and then you watch the film. And then after the conclusion of watching film, you still feel good about it. You know, so that's a real positive.
No doubt. All right, well, let's go down the offensive line here because I think in general – it played better as a unit. The Jags in the first half, with the exception of the Henny kneel down, I keep bringing this up, 12 for 48, 4 yards per carry. So wasn't spectacular, but it certainly
it was effective.
Right. They weren't getting hit in the backfield a whole lot, right? And they all had their moments running the football. And at times, Blake Bortles was able to stand back there and just scan the field, you know, and do his thing. Mm-hmm. So at times, they gave him outstanding protection. At times, there were some mistakes as well. So let's start with Jeremy Parnell. And go across the line. What'd you see from Parnell?
He's got left tackle feet, but he's got a right tackle mentality. He's everything I thought he would be. You know, from watching him in training camp, extremely competitive. When you watch practice, you know, veteran guys sometimes can have lulls. You know, to where they're out there, and then sometimes you feel like they can be going through the motions. But, you know, Jeremy Parnell is still a relatively young player, and watching him on every single snap, you can tell that he wants to be good. And he doesn't want to be just good. He wants to be great. As great as he can be, you know, because there's different levels of great for everybody's ability. He wants to be great with the tool set that he has, and he works extremely hard at it. And I love watching him practice. I love his attitude. I also saw some of the things on film that he learned. I know in the offseason I was talking to Tunch Ilkin, who is the Steelers radio color analyst and also does a lot of television for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And back when I played, and I hate to always say that, but when I played, Tunch Ilkin was a 260-pound right tackle for the Pittsburgh Steelers who was 260 pounds and didn't play like it. And the reason he did, he had great hands. He came out with the video, Tunch's Punches. And he's actually mentored some guys through the years, and he has gone and been called by different teams, whether it be collegiate level or pro level, to come in and have seminars with offensive linemen. I know that Tunch worked with this offensive line group during the offseason. You can see that Jeremy Parnell has taken some of those tips from Tunch Ilkin as far as knocking the hands down and burying guys down in the turf. And when an offensive lineman really concentrates on his hands, he can take the next step. And so that was really good to see by Jeremy Parnell. I had a long conversation with Tunch Ilkin before the game, and he said that it was great to work with these guys. And, you know, and anybody who doesn't take advantage of every opportunity that they have to get better, much like Blake Bortles going worth working with Tom House in the offseason, which is a great indicator of a guy wanting to get better, you know, you can see that Jeremy Parnell has taken those steps, and I love him. I think this guy is fantastic. Player. He was a great acquisition. He absolutely ate up Bud Dupree, the first round pick of the Pittsburgh Steelers, who I didn't think was worthy of a first round pick, but nonetheless, he ate him up. Strong, gets push, and he's only going to get better because he's still relatively young as far as the mileage on the odometer.
Right, right. All right, so we like Parnell. We like what we saw not only Friday, but everything you've seen from him on film. Brandon Linder obviously came
into
the
offseason. I mean, Lander, right. Linder's a stud.
Right. You're good. I mean, there's not a whole lot of point in
you know, what else?
A continuation of what you saw in his rookie season.
Yeah, and I said it last year. You know, I think he's one of the best guards in the National Football League. I think he's on his way to that. Is he there yet? No, just because he doesn't have the track record. But he's got incredible hands. You know, is he the strongest guy in the weight room? Probably not, but he plays like he's the strongest offensive lineman because his hands are so good. When you watch him play, and I recommend this to all fans through the preseason, if you get an opportunity, put the binoculars on it or to DVR a game, watch Brandon Linder's hands. They are never not inside in the chest of the opponent to where he has the advantageous position to play in and play out. And that allows him to play with great strength. He is an excellent football player. He's tough. He's aware. He knows what he's doing. And maybe the best pick by Dave Caldwell yet.
All right, there you go. High praise for Brandon Linder, and he's living up to it so far. Center position, we know, is a battle. Luke Bawanko, Stefan Wisniewski. What'd you see? You know, overall, you've talked to us about where you think that's headed, but tell us more, and what'd you see on film from Friday?
Well, let's start with Bawanko. The great thing about Bawanko is that he's so athletic. He's gaining awareness, which you could see at times last year he was short on, which is natural. He was a rookie. His eyes weren't in the proper place at times. His eyes are starting to get better. He's getting more aware. He's anticipating things, which when you can anticipate as a football player, it helps you to be a better performer. And I think that that's where he's at right now. Now, is he a dominant blocker? Is he going to be able to take Vince Wilfork and just wall him off? You know, Vince Wilfork is now with the Houston Texans. He's going to struggle against a Vince Wilfork type, but most people do. I mean, Vince Wilfork is one of the best nose tackles that there is. So he may struggle at times with a big power guy on his nose, but he's athletic enough to get in their way to slow him down. You know, and the comparison obviously is being drawn with Stefan Wisniewski. He's more of a mauler. He's got great awareness because he's played the game for quite some time. But I think with Stefan Wisniewski, he's at where he's going to be at for the foreseeable future. You know, I think the ceiling is going to only get so much higher for Stefan Wisniewski, whereas Bawanko, I think the ceiling's a little bit higher. You can put these guys probably on a pretty close to being on similar levels. And I think in this scenario, I think the edge will fall to the younger guy that has more of a higher ceiling in the long run because this team is still a developing football team.
Gus has not declared his starter for week two. You expect Wisniewski will get the opportunity to run?
Yeah, I think he will because, I mean, if you're going to make it a legitimate competition and you know, as you said, I'm sure, to Stefan Wisniewski when he came in here, hey, look, you know, you're going to have an opportunity to fight for a job. You've got to give him an equal opportunity, much like they gave him equal snaps throughout the football game. That's why Wisniewski played late into the ball game because the starters ended up playing, what was like 29 snaps,
right,
28 snaps, somewhere right in that range. So I would expect him to start in New York. You know, but I think you feel real confident that you got two good players at that position. But I think the third one is the most interesting one of them all, and that's Tyler Shatley. Now, Tyler Shatley didn't get into the game until late, but Tyler Shatley is the strongest by far of all of the centers. And Shatley last year got snaps at guard. He played a little bit in the London game. Upper body-wise, attitude-wise, finish-wise, he's the strongest of the three. He just doesn't have the experience. And I think Tyler Shatley is a guy that they covet, and I think that somebody's going to lose a job because Tyler Shatley is showing that he has the ability to be a really good football player.
So he'll be on this football team.
I believe he will be on this football team, period.
And maybe, you know, ultimately the center of the future
maybe.
At some point.
Maybe. So. I think what you'll see is in the future is that, you know, if you have an injury somewhere at guard, Tyler Shatley could be plugged in and say, hey, there you go.
Throw
it's
that
your
strength
job.
On the field.
Or in the future, if you feel good about where you're at guard, then you put him in competition at guard or you put him in competition at center and let the best man win.
Let's go to left guard. Zane Beadle's the incumbent. A.J. Cann, not necessarily a target for them, but a target of opportunity. He was there in the third round. They felt the grade was too high, had to take him. I know you like his raw
he's
strength.
Got power.
Right.
I mean, he's got things that other guys can't do. He can do things that Zane Beadle's can't do.
He's a big man.
He's a powerful man. You know, he's not tall. He's not 6'5 or 6'6 like Zane Beadle or Bawanko or Linder, but he's got the ability to move guys. And at the NFL level, it's very rare that you have guys that can move guys, and A.J. Cann can move them. Now, to look at the game film alone and ignore everything else, Zane Beadle played well. He was solid. And which I thought was a step up because, you know, last week I was saying, hey, look, you know, make the move now because A.J. Cann was having some moments in practice to where you were going, Zane Beadle couldn't do that on his best day. You know, and I'm talking about moving guys 4 or 5 yards out of the way, taking a linebacker and taking them for a ride 10 yards down the field. The Beatles played well, and that's positive for this team. You know, to have a veteran guy to perform, if you've got some question marks at center, and yes, you have some question marks and concerns at left tackle, to have a guy that maybe stabilized that position. But I think that is a real competition, and it's a good competition. When you have two guys that are playing well, that's a positive thing. Now, A.J. Cann in the game, he had some moments to where he showed that power, but you can see that the comfort is not there yet with the offense, to where a couple times he's not sure where he needs to go and who he needs to block. And when that happens, you don't see the power because you're not seeing the aggressiveness, you know, the anticipation. So I thought that was a learning game, learning experience for A.J. Cann, and I think that this week and the next week here throughout the preseason, we'll start to see more of what he's capable of, because in practice, when he knows what he's supposed to do, and it's not a foreign defense, a 3-4, which he hadn't seen at the NFL level, he's going to be playing with more confidence and more power, and I think it's going to be exciting to watch.
But for the short term, looks like Beatles, because of the experience factor, probably the guy you'd handicap as the most likely opening day starter still.
TBD, buddy.
TBD, all right. To be determined. There's one more spot on the offensive line. Oh, but it's the bottom of the hour, Tony. What a tease. We will come back and look at the left tackle position in a moment. Jeff Loggeman breaking down the film from Friday's preseason opener. Jags a winner on the field. What about individually? We'll get into it and continue to do that with Jeff throughout the course of the next hour and a half. Your call is welcome at 641-1010. And the texts are coming in fast and furious. We'll get to some of those on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line coming up shortly. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony. Jeff Loggeman here with you on a Tuesday, brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, we continue along on this Tuesday, brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Jaguars Today live at Everbank Field. The return of Jeff Loggeman on a semi-permanent basis, at least now to the end of the football season. Tuesdays from 10 till noon, that's where you're going to find him, right here on Jaguars Today with Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony. Glad you're along with us here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. We've gone through, Jeff, four out of the five starting positions on the offensive line, and for the most part, you thought everyone acquitted themselves fairly well on Friday night. Luke Jokel, to me, is just a guy, and Tony and I have talked a lot about this, that there's a lot of spotlight on him. Right, mm-hmm. Just because where he got drafted, fans' expectations, first draft pick ever by Dave Caldwell.
He's the left tackle.
He's the right left tackle, which is one of the premier positions in the league. For a variety of reasons, we understand, played right tackle when he first came in, got injured, had to rehab, all these things, I get it, but hasn't played up to what people would expect, having seen him come in as the number 2 overall pick in the draft up to this point.
Yeah.
First of all, let's get to Friday night, what you saw from him Friday night, and then let's talk about your larger expectations for where he's going to head this season. What did you see on the film looking at Friday night's game?
I thought he played okay. I don't think it was challenged that much. You know, the Steelers almost rushed Bud Dupree almost exclusively to where, you know, in a 3-4 defense, you can send one of the two outside linebackers pretty much every time. And they'd said, okay, we're going to get Bud Dupree all these reps, and they kept sending him. So Parnell got tested, whereas Luke Jokel never really got tested because he was getting Stephon Tuitt, Cameron Hayward, you know, the bigger guys, you know, the big mauling types. And then he does get the opportunity against James Harrison, and it was a terrible set. It was shallow. His feet stopped, and the head went down, and James Harrison made it look really easy. And, I mean, really, it wasn't that good of a pass rush. You know, excuse me, by James Harrison. So, I mean, that was disappointing. You know, I will say this about Lucho. He run blocks. He's a very good run blocker. He finishes. He plays with great pad level. He plays with awareness. But in practice, he has still had issues with the leaning and the sets. And, you know, a left tackle and Baselli and Ogden, Mike Ken, to go back a little bit farther, you know, the Walter Jones, they really negated a lot of great moves by just their spatial relationship between them and the quarterback and the pass rusher. In other words, their feet did all the work. And we know that Luke has good feet. He just needs to gain the confidence that the feet are good because, you know, watching him at Texas A&M, that's what he did. I mean, he made it look so easy. I remember when he came out and I watched Jokel and Fisher, and I was like, this isn't even a comparison. Luke Jokel is twice the player that Eric Fisher is. I can't believe the Chiefs actually selected Eric Fisher over Luke Jokel. And I still feel that way, and I still feel that he has great feet. But I think that a lot of the commentary that you're hearing is, I don't want to say to protect Luke Jokel, but allow him to develop confidence and to allow him to continue to develop. And a lot of people may get frustrated by, you know, the coach saying, hey, look, you know, we feel like he's progressing. You know, they want him to develop because they believe that he can develop, and they don't want him to all of a sudden have this mental block to where it's like, I got to do this, I got to do that, and then if it doesn't happen exactly the way he wanted it to happen, where he gets frustrated, and all of a sudden then the play starts to go down. So I get it, but also the expectation is high for him, and it's in my mind it's not high because he's the third overall pick or whatever. I get that the fans feel that way. And my commentary to that is always, much like Tyson Alualu, they didn't pick themselves at that spot. You know, so you can't put the expectation with where they're picked. You can to the general manager and the organization, but you can't affix that expectation to the player. So, but my expectation is based on what I see in his ability. And what I see in Luke's ability is a Pro Bowl level player. I think he has that ability. He has that feet. But for some reason right now, the feet sometimes stop. The set is not great. And then you got the lean thing to where he's kind of, last year he had this thing where, you know, you got to get bigger, you got to get stronger, you're not dealing with the pass rush. So the more confidence that he gains that he can handle the power, which he can, the better he will be in his pass sets and the more disciplined he will be in his pass sets. I think he's going to be fine. I don't worry about him very much. But also at the same level, I'm not worried, but I am watching it very closely.
And that's kind of what my point is on him. Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
There's going to be focus on it because we haven't seen it yet. He hasn't you believe he's going to get there.
Yes.
But he's got to do it. He's got to get there.
He's got to start showing signs.
And the thing that Tony Boselli brought up on the pregame that he acknowledged,
when I had to separate you two?
Well, you were between us already, so I felt pretty confident that Boselli wasn't going to get through you. But I thought that he admitted that
Tony's a left tackle apologist.
A little bit. Well, he did admit. Look, he has a problem with the bull rush, just the pure strength still at times, right? And on the broadcast when it happened, because you know Tony and I are in here listening to you guys as we watch the game on TV. We're in the studio, and it seemed Tony felt that he was anticipating a bull rush on that play, and therefore he kind of got himself in a position where he's thinking, I've got to be able to handle this. I've got to get quickly into that set. And he got maybe surprised by what Harrison did.
The set was too flat, you know, because
means what? Explain that.
Well, if you can picture, you know, an offensive lineman, okay, and the line of scrimmage is your beginning point, Luke's set was probably more, instead of a 45-degree angle, it was too flat. And so
he was like square to the line of scrimmage.
He went closer to the line of scrimmage than he did anticipating, because James Harrison looks really good and he's got big arms, and that's typically what his game has been, is power. And then so he's kind of attacking it a little bit instead of having confidence that when I get the power, then I react and get my hands inside and set. And then set in stone and drop the anchor
out. Like absorb it and then
so that's one of the things that I notice is, and I look at it from the other side of the ball. Okay, I'm looking at his set, and I'm going, okay, if I had a guy who sets like that, what is my game plan? And my game plan with him would be to actually take it to him hard at a short angle to make him start to gather and prepare for power, knowing that it's going to shorten the corner, which is exactly what James Harrison did. James took it right to him, and then just did the little
dip inside.
Move, and it went right around the outside, you know. And so James Harrison did exactly what I would have done having watched Luke Jokel all through training camp. And Luke needs to start getting his sets a little deeper, more to 45-degree angle, not worrying so much about the power because you react to power. And that's what makes the good ones good, is that they don't concern themselves with anything. They prepare knowing that this is what I could possibly see, but at the same time, they don't prepare for anything, they react.
So, in other words, you feel like the ability's all there, and now the confidence level of Jokel needs to catch up to his natural skill set.
His sets need to get better. his weight distribution needs to get better, and then his confidence that he can handle the power without having to combat power with power, that he can handle it by, okay, if I get knocked back, because, you know, as an offensive tackle, and it was always great to have an offensive tackle that was always worried about getting powered and the ones that hated getting pushed back into the pocket. Look, as an offensive tackle, it takes typically 3.5-4 seconds to really get pushed back in the pocket. That's okay. It's okay because, you know what, the ball's gone by then.
Right.
You know, and I'm not saying that it's a testosterone thing where you're going, I can't be powered, you know. But some guys have that mindset that I have to stop them here. No, you don't have to stop them here. You just have to slow them down to where the ball's out before he can get there. And if getting pushed back a little bit is part of that equation, so be it.
You can give a little ground as long as you're keeping him in front of you.
And that's what Tony Boselli was so good at. And that Tony never met power with power, rarely, if ever. He had the ability to, when the power came, his hips would drop, his hands would come back and get inside, and then he would regain the leverage point. Because he was so athletic, he could recover. Luke Jokel has the athletic ability to recover and to reset his power base and get his weight back underneath him and absorb, and then to combat the power after it happens. He doesn't have to anticipate it and meet it.
Will they, as it stands right now, you like Parnell as much as you do, you like Linder, that right side of the line looks strong. Will they try to use Mercedes on the left side to help out Luke Jokel, or is that oversimplifying it?
No, I think that you keep giving him the opportunity to develop, and you can't game plan with the expectation, look, this guy's not good enough. You can't do that. You know, because I think first and foremost, I think that he has the ability to be able to handle it. Now, will there be moments that, you know, if he's facing a great pass rusher that he's going to need a chip?
Sure.
Or some help by a running back or tight end? Sure. Based upon the game plan of who the player is that's opposite side of Luke.
You know, as Boselli and I were debating this out, arguing this out, however you want to look at it, he made the point that, well, I don't watch 32 left tackles around the league. How do I know exactly what he is? And I'll admit, I wouldn't know exactly what to look for. I just know he's given up too many big plays for my taste over the course of his short career. So for the typical fan out there, what should they be looking for from Luke Jokel? Give us a crash course on how to watch a left tackle in a simple way to know if he's on the right path to getting to where you want him to be.
Watch his feet and watch his lean. I mean, that's the thing that I think that is most important to watch with him. When a defender makes a move on him, is the head going down or is it staying back and upright?
Okay, so you're looking for the head to stay up.
Up.
Means you're balanced and in a good position.
And the weight balanced. And what his and I said this, and I'm not trying to be fancy, but his spatial relationship, and this sometimes is hard to understand, and it might be a little too complex for people to look at, but you always have to think that the offensive tackle needs to be directly between the defender and the quarterback. And if that relationship gets skewed one way or the other, he's not where he needs to be. You know, because, I mean, if it's a 7-step drop, his set needs to be 45-degree angle or sometimes even steeper. You know, and one of the things that an offensive tackle has to look for, if Zane Beatles, who is right next to Luke Jokel in this next preseason game, if Luke Jokel has a 3-technique on Zane Beatles and he is wide out in the gap, like almost on the inside shoulder of Luke Jokel, and then Luke Jokel has Robert Ayers, who is basically the replacement for JPP right now for the time being, and he is a wide rusher. What's the set of Luke Jokel? If he has a wide 3-technique, he needs to set almost not straight back, but set deeper and have his inside arm feeling that 3-technique, anticipating, because he's so wide, we could have a TE, which is the tackle gets up the field and then the end loops around. So a lot of that is awareness and changing the sets based on what the positioning of the defenders are. You know, and that's what the truly great ones are, the ones that basically can tell you what the game is going to be before the ball is snapped based on alignment, stance, etc. Or they're prepared for it to possibly happen. So it's a lot of fun to watch, and I know it's very hard to watch in a game. It's one of these things where, you know, when you watch the film and you're watching the end zone copy, you can see it and you can really hone in on it. And for those that get the NFL film package,
sure, the league
with pass, the end zone copy, That's really something fun to watch, is to actually see how the sets are based on the alignments, et cetera. But it's, I think he's going to be better, and I think he's going to be okay, but it's definitely something that, you know, he has to continue to get better. And I've seen that he has gotten better through training camp, and he's getting some great coaching from Doug Marrone and Luke Butkus. And I expect it to continue to get better, because overall, the offensive line improvement from last year to this year, as far as how they work together, has been an incredible jump so far.
And the raw talent level just
absolutely
looks so much better as well. All right, so there you go. I'll call that, Tony, maybe football 201.
Yeah.
I don't think that was 101. I think we took it a step beyond football 101 on some things I'll be looking for more from Luke Joeckel to be able to better accurately gauge if he's getting the job done as well. So still work in progress at this point in time. And as you said,
that's what they got preseason for.
He's got the ability, but he's got to do it. He's got to use that ability, and this is the year. Wouldn't you say a big year for him? Fair to say?
It's a big year for him, and the one thing that I want to see more of from Luke, when Luke is in the run game, you can see how he finishes plays. I mean, he finishes like a right tackle. Luke Joeckel's a better run blocker than Joe Thomas right now. Let me say that, you know, to give him a positive. He's a better run blocker than Joe Thomas right now, and Joe Thomas is a Pro Bowler for the Cleveland Browns.
Sure. You know, Joe Thomas, by the way, I saw the stat yesterday. He's never missed a snap.
Yeah.
In his career. Through multiple injuries, never missed a single snap. That's pretty impressive.
But when you watch Joe Thomas never has his head down facing the ground. His face is never looking down at the turf when he is pass blocking. That's where Luke Joeckel needs to get to, because, in my opinion, Luke Joeckel has as good a feet as Joe Thomas.
Got to put it all together. All right, there you go. You look at the Jaguars left tackle. We got to get to the defensive side of the football, and we will, with Jeff Loggeman here with us on a Tuesday, brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. On this date, August 18th, 1981, we'll start with Herschel Walker at the University of Georgia, one of the first guys to take out a Lloyd's of London insurance policy for as much as $1 million. Seems like most of these insurance policies through Lloyd's of London for these football players come for career-ending injuries. And Joe Theismann got paid off, but not many actually do if they're declared able to continue their football careers. 1986, on this date, Jim Kelly left the USFL to sign with the Buffalo Bills. 5 years, $7.5 million at the time, made him the highest paid player in the National Football League. And 1 year later on this date, Houston Oiler Earl Campbell hung it up and retired from the National Football League. Birthdays on this date, 1967. Yurko, John Yurkovich, longtime Jacksonville Jaguar, born in 1967. 1968, the NFL's number two guy on the career all-purpose yardage list, Brian Mitchell, born on this date. 1975, happy 40th to Paul Spicer, one of our favorite Jags. And Jeremy Shockey, born on this date in 1980. Top 10 all-time guys, career all-purpose yards. Jerry Rice, number one. Brian Mitchell. Walter Payton, a little over 21, nearly 22,000. Emmett Smith right behind him. Tim Brown, he's got those return yards factored in. Marshall Faulk, number six. LaDainian Tomlinson, seven. Barry Sanders. Herschel Walker himself coming in at number nine.
That was surprising.
I believe he's the pro football record holder for all time when you factor in his USFL yardage. Number 10, all time, active player, all time, top 10. All-purpose yards, only active player in the top 10. Any guess at who that would be? He's a wide receiver.
I don't know.
Steve Smith. About that.
Yeah. How about that?
Return man. Steve Smith is top 10 all time.
I remember when George Seifert was the head coach of the Carolina Panthers, and Steve Smith at that time was a rookie and was essentially doing returns only. And I was doing games for Fox. You know, I was like their fifth, sixth guy, whatever you want to call it, on their regional broadcast crew. So, you know, I had the bad teams. You know, I'd get the Falcons, the Carolina Panthers, a lot of teams in that, you know, what is now the NFC South.
Sure.
And I remember sitting down the day before the game, because you always met with the home team on Saturdays. in the morning, sometimes on Fridays as well. But I was sitting down with George Seifert, and I said, you know, George, and I knew George because when I was a free agent, I took a visit to the 49ers when Pete Carroll and George Seifert were in San Francisco prior to coming here. And said, you know, you've got a very talented young player in Steve Smith who is just lighting it up as a returner. At what point do you put him in as a wide receiver and start to have plays designed for him? I said, would you anticipate doing that this week? And George says, no, we're just going to let him focus in on being a returner. Well, the next day on game day, Steve Smith is lining up a wide receiver, and is throwing the ball every time. And I'm going, what happened to the trust factor
right
between the network and the coaching staff? And I was ripping George Seifert on the air. I was like, you know what? We had a meeting with George Seifert and told, you know, the listeners that he said that he was not going to be in on offense as a wide receiver. And I said, it was obviously now that he had told us a very big lie.
Now, the next time we see George Seifert, Tony, at the Super Bowl on Radio Row, we know what we're going to. First question, George, what's the story with this Steve Smith deal?
He was an absolute failure as a coach in Carolina. I remember covering, you know, that team for a couple different years when he was there. And I've never covered a football team to where you just felt like that there was such a lack of energy and a lack of direction with a football team. And I'm not saying that because the guy lied to me about Steve Smith. But
right.
I mean, it felt like it was just a complete state of depression around that organization at that time. I mean, just an organization going nowhere.
This state in football history is brought to you by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry on Gate Parkway. If you're in the market for a family dentist or you need some cosmetic work done, call 620-9225 or visit jamesjmccall.com to get a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this state in football history.
Now, the drive around the NFL on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
The Arizona Cardinals and running back Chris Johnson have agreed to a one-year contract for $870,000. It could be worth up to $2 million if Johnson rushes for 1,300 yards and makes the Pro Bowl.
He won't.
No. Chalk this up under the misleading headlines category of stories. If you were listening to anyone talking about the RG3 story yesterday, they represented it simply as RG3 says he's the best quarterback in the NFL, which sounds like a completely ridiculous thing for him to say. Slightly less ridiculous is his actual quote to WJLA-TV. He said, quote, I feel like I'm the best quarterback in the league and I have to go out and show that. Any athlete at any level, if they concede to someone else, they're not a top competitor. They're not trying to be the best that they can be. There's guys in this league that have done way more than me, but I still view myself as the best because that's what I work toward every single day. And Kansas City Chiefs left tackle Eric Fisher will miss the next 2 weeks due to an ankle sprain that he suffered in practice. Fisher was the only player selected ahead of Luke Jokel in the 2013 NFL Draft.
And there, I'm sure, talking about when is Eric Fisher going to put it together out in Kansas City.
I mean, that's the discussion that they're having out there. I know that Andy Reid last week had an interview where they specifically talked about Eric Fisher, and he was commending him on how he was working to be a better player. To me, the Kansas City Chiefs made a big mistake not picking Luke Jokel. I mean, Luke Jokel was and is the better prospect at left tackle. Even though that Luke Jokel is still not
understood
where you want him to be.
Understood.
Yeah, and I want to clarify something because, you know, a lot of times people can misconstrue some things that I would say. And I said earlier that I believe that Luke Jokel has Joe Thomas feet. And I want to say that I believe that he does as far as God-given feet. But there's a difference. Joe Thomas has some kick-butt football left tackle feet. Luke Jokel does not have kick-butt left tackle feet yet. But I think if you looked at the two of those guys, athletically speaking, they have very similar feet. I don't want anybody to kind of...
He has the raw material to develop into that type of player.
Absolutely.
That's what you're saying.
Yes.
Yes. All right. Now,
but he does not have the power that Joe Thomas has at this point.
Right. Can he get to that point? Or
I don't know about that.
I mean, look, Joe Thomas is one of the best left tackles of this generation.
Yeah.
So
Joe Thomas is not the Walter Jones, Tony Boselli, John Ogden level.
Right.
He's just a slight notch below that. But not a big slight.
Well, he's a pretty damn good left tackle.
He's an excellent tackle, And maybe the most impressive thing is that, like what you were talking about, Joe Thomas hasn't missed a snap in his career.
It's unbelievable.
Which is amazing. That's amazing.
That is pretty amazing. Now, we're going to get into the defensive side of the football. We'll do that mostly after the break, but while we've got a couple minutes on this side, what about the call by Jeff Logman, Tony, on the final snap of the damn game on Friday night? I mean, he just laid it out there. I want to see Cap Cappy and this. Well, I guess it wasn't the final snap of the game, but it, what seemed like at the time would put it away
the
for the Jags.
Snap.
The decisive snap of the game. And Cap Cappy comes in, gets a sack of Landry Jones, and he's celebrating. And Cap Cappy making a name for himself, at least for that night. What do you see in this guy? Does this guy have a chance to put himself in the mix at what is a deep position group on the defensive line?
For practice squad. You know, I mean, it's, look, Cap Cappy was going against a guy that probably along the lines of himself.
Understood.
And that long shot to make the football team. But, you know, look, if you can continue to make plays like that, you know, people are going to take notice, you know, because you're not only putting things out there for the team that you're with, but you're also putting things out there for the other teams around the league to take a look at. And he definitely showed some things. The thing that really really impressed me the most, and the reason that I said that Cap Cappy is going to get a sack here or we need him to make a play right here, his energy and endurance as the game wore on in the two-minute drills, because basically the defense was up there for two-minute drills, was his ability to continue to perform play after play at a higher level. So his endurance was letting him continue to play at a faster level than the guys on offense, which typically works opposite because it takes more energy to rush the passer
right.
than it does to protect the passer. He was getting better. You know, so I don't know if he has Lance Armstrong's secret to blood doping or whatever, and I'm just joking here. But, I mean, his endurance was unbelievable. In every play, you could see that he was getting closer and closer and closer, and I said, it's time. Now it's going to happen. And congratulations to him because, I mean, it's an undrafted guy. I talked with him after the game for the postgame radio, and he's got his phone in his hand, and his mom has tried
That's
calling
awesome.
Him like five times. He just got two sacks in his first NFL game ever. And his mom was in attendance. She drove down to see the game. I mean, that's awesome stuff.
You know, Jeff, we so often, Tony and I were sitting here, and, you know, ultimately we're going to focus on the 53-man roster. And out of those guys, we're really going to focus on about, you know, 30 guys throughout the course of the season as your main contributors. And every one of these guys has a story like that. And I'm on, over the weekend, I'm on Cap Cappy's Instagram, like looking at, you know, just because it's cool to see, you know, all the reaction, everybody.
Have you ever talked to him?
Love. No, I haven't
he
yet.
He is an absolute joy to talk with.
Well, he sounded like it after the game.
Yeah.
That was great. He's like, everyone's blowing up the phone. I can't get to it. So it was just cool to see him put it out there. And this was, you know, some of the pictures were from, you know, months ago throughout the summer and stuff, just talking about, hey, don't tell me I'm not going to make it. I'm, you know, this is my dream. I'm the only one who dictates whether I fulfill this or not. Mm-hmm. And obviously, the guys who make the decision on the roster have a role in that. But it, the attitude of, if I believe I can do it, I can do it. And you got to have that, man. And it's one thing for, we hear about these guys who are great. We hear RG3, right, say he's the best quarterback in the league.
Will he just shut up, please?
I got it, but you, whether he should have said it or not, that mentality of I am the best, I'm the ultimate competitor, you have to carry that with you to some degree, don't you, when you go out there?
You have to have a belief in yourself.
Yes.
But you don't have the belief that I'm the best because what that's saying is I got it.
Right.
Which, you know, you've heard
that's
Gus
Bradley least favorite
talk
expression.
About the three most dangerous words is I got it.
Right.
And that's the attitude that I think that RG3 has, because by saying that, now he did say that I've got to go out and prove it, but at the same token, RG3 has said in the past, I don't have anything to prove to anybody.
Right.
Well, no, yes, you do. You have a lot to prove to yourself, and you've got even more to prove to your teammates and your coaching staff that you can lead this football team to victory. RG3 needs to just close his mouth and put his nose to the grindstone and go to work. You know, because you watch the guy on film, he's clearly not anywhere where he needs to be.
All right, Jeff Logman is here. That's clearly where he needs to be in the Jaguars Today studios today. And let's go to the defensive side of the ball when we return. Let's take a look. First team defense versus Steelers first team offense. Well, they weren't on the field very long. I guess that's what the good thing you could say about how that drive went, Tony. It didn't last all that long. Got the offense right back out there. So we'll get into it with Jeff. The good and the bad of what he saw on Friday night from the defensive side of the football and how he handicaps the ongoing battle between Scobie and Jason Myers as well in the kicking department. All that coming up. It's Jaguars Today. If you'd like to get in, we will get to your text coming up on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line at 641-1010. Also, you can call in with your thoughts there, and you have the Twitter handles as well. Got a lot of text to get to, and we'll try to get to as many as we can. Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
One back set, four wide. Four-man rush. Jones, he is going to get hit. Jeff Lagerman called for it. Jeff Lagerman said, Cappy, sack him. Cappy sacked him. The ball goes over on downs.
You got to love it. What a name.
What a call. He called for Cappy to sack him, and he sacked him.
I would have probably rather used those powers of prognostication on, I don't know, Tony, like a Powerball or something, but it's pretty cool nonetheless. See Loggy get the call right there. Called his man, and he got the job done. Let's talk a little defense. Jeff Lagerman in studio here with us for the first of many Tuesday sessions on Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony. Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. All right, Jeff, first team defense out there against Ben Roethlisberger and crew. They're one of the more potent offenses in the league. Certainly, they were talking earlier this offseason about their goal is to average 30 points a game. Keeping in mind, the Jags average under 16 a game last year. You got Roethlisberger threw for nearly 5,000 last year. Antonio Brown, Martavis Bryant, Marcus Wheaton, Heath Miller. You got Le'Veon Bell out of the backfield, so he's got weapons to work with. They went down the field awfully quickly. One bad play, one blown assignment. You know, Devon House slips on a double move. Was it as bad? How should we feel about that? Realizing it is only one drive, but watching the film of that, how disturbed were you by how easily Pittsburgh went down the field?
I wouldn't say disturbed, but I mean, you know, it's one of those series where you go, I'm ready to see something different next week. You know what I mean?
Let's see some more of this against the ones, and let's have a better result.
Yeah, because it was one drive. But look, the Pittsburgh Steelers offense is, you know, and it's hard to think of the Pittsburgh Steelers offense this way because they've been so good on defense for so long. They're one of the most prolific offenses in the National Football League. I mean, the numbers don't lie. I mean, last year, when top-tier quarterback, top running back, top wide receiver, excellent football team offensively. And it was, what, a couple years ago you were talking about the relationship between the quarterback and the offensive coordinator not being very good.
It seems to be better.
Yeah, I think it's working out okay. Yeah. You know, so, it's cause for concern, but at the same token, you also know that you have a lot of fluidness to the defense. You know, there was a lot of guys that weren't there up front. You're trying some new pieces out. The one run fit on Le'Veon Bell was not very good when you had an opportunity in the open field to make a tackle.
Was that Cyprian?
That was Sip. Needs to be better in that instance. And then you have a defensive back falling down on a touchdown pass, and then he got flagged. And I was watching the film going, what did they throw the flag on? You know?
So you didn't think it was a hold?
No, it was not a hold. I mean, the guy scored a touchdown. How did he get held?
Right.
You know? So, but you know, Devon House has to obviously get better, and I think he will, and I think he kind of started slow in training camp, and he started to come on, but you watch the way he played the remainder of that game, and he played pretty well. So
they did give up the big catch, and it didn't stay in bounds. Martavis Bryant couldn't get the second foot in bounds. I thought, you know, that there's some debate on whether that should have been offensive pass interference. I think you, it might have been you who said, well, he didn't really extend the arm. I thought that was one I could see
push.
The refs letting that go, though, you know.
He got a good legal push.
Right, legal push, but that's a savvy move by a young player. And
now you always talk about with wide receivers is that you have to push off, but you have to push off, and most good wide receiver coaches and veterans learn that the push has to happen where the elbow never leaves the body. So in other words, if you take your elbow and you literally take a rope and tie your upper arm around your body and you just use your elbow to your hand as like a flipper. That's the push that veterans need to learn that they can get away with.
You can get away with that one.
You can get away with that. And an excellent move by, was it Bryant, right?
It was Martavis Bryant on that,
yeah. It was an excellent job by him of getting a little bit of push off. And because if you extend the arm, if the elbow comes away from the body, you'll get called every time for an offensive pass interference.
All right, we won't be able to get through every single player on the defensive side of the football, but let's look at some of these guys in the secondary. Sergio Brown comes in more of a, has played some free safety, but more of a career special teamer.
Yeah, and that's a problem that, and I don't say a problem, that's a position that you need to have better performance. I don't know if Sergio Brown is necessarily the answer there. I'm looking forward to James Sample. I said after the draft that James Sample was going to be the guy that's going to win this job.
And just got on the practice field today in
a limited capacity. Yeah, which is a real positive because, the one good thing people say, well, how can a rookie come in and, you know, with limited training camp, come in and compete for the starting job? James Sample signed to play for Louisville last year, showed up on campus 2 days before the start of training camp, never had anything in the offseason with them, earned the starting job, and performed at extremely high level. This defense that Gus Bradley runs is not a complex one. You know, so the learning curve is not steep, but there's still learning to be done because the game is a little bit different at the NFL level. So it's going to be fun to watch. I think he has an opportunity at winning that starting job because nobody has really put their hands up in the air and said, I'm the guy. And look at the way I'm playing. You know, and I'm talking about letting their actions, unlike RG3 saying it.
Right.
You know, so the cornerback spot, interesting. Devon House, Demetrius McCray, Aaron Colvin, Dwayne Grotz, all four of them are competing. I think that is a real battle between McCray and then also Aaron Colvin. But that competition could move over to the other side at some point, too. You know, so
right now you think it's House and you're leaning towards Colvin, right?
Right now,
but you think it could end up Colvin and possibly the other two guys going head-to-head for that spot, right?
Could be.
And a fluid situation up until this point, you would say.
I think this is a battle that won't stop at the beginning of the season.
Gotcha.
It's going to be performance. Much like last year where we saw, you know, Dwayne Grotz and then Demetrius McCray and everybody else kind of rolling in at that corner spot. I think this is going to be one of those instances, much like we saw with safety last year, you know, to where – you know, the first 5 weeks of the season, the secondary really struggled, and they were trying to find the right combination of guys. Hopefully somebody becomes the clear-cut starter at all of those positions, but if it doesn't happen, that battle continues on.
How many corners does this team keep? Where's Jeremy Harris in the mix? What are they going to do with Nick Marshall?
Five corners, probably four safeties. You know,
so who's that fifth?
Corner?
Yeah.
Nick Marshall's got a chance. Jeremy Harris' scholarship is over. I think that...
What kind of offseason has he had from what you've heard? Just that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, just... Jeremy Harris, the one thing that it's hard for me to get out of my mind is when you're a fifth corner, you have to have the ability to play core four special teams. And I just remember watching Jeremy Harris on special teams, and it's not pretty. It's not pretty. Now, I'll just leave it at that.
Nick Marshall contribute enough on special teams, even if he doesn't win one of the primary return jobs?
And here's something. We talked about this a couple weeks ago when I sat out in with you in training camp, is that eventually, you know, could Nick Marshall play safety? You know, I think that's a consideration for future.
Down the line, right.
Down the line, not right now. But he's very talented. You know, Gus Bradley show last Thursday asked him the question. And this got misconstrued, too, and that's why I wanted to clarify the Joe Thomas comment. I saw that somebody was trying to summarize or recap the Gus Bradley show. My question to Gus was, out of the cornerbacks, which one has the best ball skills? Now, ball skills and coverage skills are two completely different things.
Ball skills are making a break on the ball and actually catching
the
ball.
Yeah. Catching the football. The ability to intercept. The ability to have hand-eye coordination.
Yeah, if you're in position, who's the best at catching it?
And it jumped right out of him. He said, you know, Nick Marshall. And part of that was is that I guess that day that Nick Marshall had made a spectacular play in practice, and so it was fresh on his mind. But when you have a head coach that says that, and that's his first reaction, that's a pretty good sign for a young player. And he's fun to watch because he is very athletic.
Oh,
he's still got a lot to learn. He's pretty fast. And here's a guy that played quarterback for the most part for the last 2 years. Now, I know he played cornerback in his past, but if he's at this level already, you know, which is not probably not good enough to be on the field yet. But if he's at that level at this point, where can he be next year?
Right. You know? So funny to see him covering, as you guys pointed out, Sammy Coates in the game, who he was throwing to last year, mm-hmm. and now he's covering.
Yeah, he's covering.
You know, his very first.
And the other thing that was interesting when you looked at it, Nick Marshall's wearing 41, Sammy Coates is wearing 14.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, the numbers are
right.
are flip flopped on opposite sides of the balls, and here they were, you know, playing catch in college.
Let's look at the linebacking core quickly. Just what has stood out to you, good and bad, not only from just Friday night, but throughout the course of the offseason?
Well, I mean, the starting group is set. It's, you know, Scooter, Telvin Smith, Paul Posluszny, Jeremiah George, I thought, played pretty well on defense, but on special teams he was a standout. He had two blocks that were just wow, like what I call the dead roach blocks, to where the guy ends up on his back and his feet and his arms are up in the air. Really nice plays by him. The rest of the linebacking corps, Kerry Fort, you know, didn't do much. Ambrister showed some athleticism. But, you know, that's the one guy that did a couple nice things was Todd Thomas, which kind of surprised me because, you know, he's an undrafted free agent rookie from Pittsburgh, really hadn't done much yet as far as in my eyes, you know, as far as he hadn't grabbed my attention yet. And he grabbed my attention a couple times on special teams. Got some speed.
Who is the most indispensable player on defense? Single most indispensable guy, do you think?
Across the board.
Yes, on defense.
I don't know if you have one. You know, and by saying that, that's not necessarily a good thing.
Right.
Right?
Because you want to have difference.
You want to have a superstar.
Right, you want a superstar that there's no way you can replace a J.J. Watt or somebody like that.
I mean, the most important guy is probably in Cedric Marks. You know, and he's probably the most important piece to the puzzle that you have, but I wouldn't put him in that, you know, indispensable category, because I mean for me that is reserved for elite players, and Cedric is close to that, but he's done it for 1 year, kind of feeling, you know, so he's close to that, but he's not there yet.
What are you hearing on a timetable for him?
I'm not hearing anything, but I will say that, you know, ACL reconstruction, early January, opener is early September. That puts him at 9 months. You know, throw out all the freaks of nature that have come back, like Adrian Peterson, have come back in a shorter window. You know, the average is typically about 10 and a half months. You know, so I don't even want to see Cedric Marks until at least October, because he's a big athletic man. Big athletic men typically take a little bit more time. And we're not talking about a 180-pound cornerback. We're not talking about an offensive lineman who, you know, the athletic part of their game is minimal. We're talking a 300-pound man that plays the game with power and athleticism. That's a lot to ask for him to come back from an ACL reconstruction in 9 months. I don't want to see him until at least October.
Texter sent this one. I think this is probably during the offensive line conversation. He said, I just tuned in. I thought y'all were interviewing Rex Ryan. A lot of feet talk going on up there. I'm just kidding. Love Loggeman back here on 1010XL. So do we, and we will come back with him. We'll read some of your texts on the other side and get to the fan feedback question of the day, asking you who's the most underrated Jaguar of all time. And Jeff will weigh in on where things stand with Josh Scobie and Jason Myers as well. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and the return of Jeff Loggeman as a regular here on Jaguars Today. Tuesdays brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. This is 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Just one of those things in football, man. You know, you're coming out on the backside of a boot and, you know, cloud corner. So I saw him, as able to catch him at the last second. Just tried to make sure I got my feet out the ground, try to protect my knees. Just got flipped over, and after the play, you know, everything felt good, and looked down and finger was a little messed up.
Yeah, we're looking across the table at what football does to your fingers.
Loggeman, I had that happen one time.
You're not quite Torrey Holt with the finger.
No.
You got it's not really an awkward angle out to the side. It's just then really your pinky doesn't seem to straighten out all the way.
No, but it's funny that, you know, Julius Thomas, that's who was talking right there about how everything felt fine, and you walk back to the huddle, you look down and you see a finger or something pointing in the direction that it shouldn't. And had that happen, I thought it was probably like my fourth or fifth year, and you play a series, and then you're coming off the field, and the trainer's running over to you, and you're like, what's going on? And he's like, hey, come here. I'm like, what? He says, your finger. And I look down, and my right pinky is pointing at a 90-degree angle going out. Never felt it. Had no idea. You know, I mean, just the adrenaline and everything else in a football game, you have no idea. And Julie's happened to look down and see that something wasn't pointing in the right direction. You know, so that's not something new to most football players.
Julie's, according to John Osier at Jaguars.com, Julius and Cyprian both out there today in red non-contact jerseys trying to participate. You know,
and Cyprian, I mean, he was on the Jaguars.com postgame report with me.
Played like a bunch of plays after he hurt himself. Right?
And he didn't have anything on his finger, and obviously, you know, a few minutes later, I mean, when the adrenaline starts to wear off, you feel things. And then he went and had the doctors check it out. So, I mean, fortunately for both of these guys, it's not a situation to where surgery is required and extended period of time is not going to be missed as far as the conditioning level on practice. So that's a positive.
Before we get to the question of the day, some questions for you on the text line, Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, 641-1010, the number. Let's see. Forgetting the sunshine and rainbows outlook we sometimes hear regarding the Jags, what can we realistically expect from the Jaguars? I think they're looking for a record. Like, what's the range of what you're looking for realistically for this football team as of this moment?
Me? Six to eight.
6 to 8 wins.
Yeah, somewhere in that range.
Okay. I don't think that's sunshine and rainbows.
For me, that is sunshine and rainbows. Because you know what? It's a heck of a lot better.
Well, 8 wins would be almost match what they've done the last 3 years.
And it's getting better. You know, I mean, that's what you're looking for.
Right.
Is continuous improvement.
Let's see. This one. And what do you see, Jeff, as a likely unavoidable negative regarding the Jags this year? In other words, what is a problem you think this team has, maybe personnel-wise, whatever, that you're just not convinced they have the answer on the roster?
You look at positions. I think a veteran presence at wide receiver and dependable wide receiver is first and foremost on my mind offensively. I feel pretty good about their offensive line and their depth. I feel great about where Blake Bortles is headed. You know, their running back position, I thought that group, you know, has made a big jump this year. But the wide receiver group is still a concern for me. If you get one injury there, then you're very raw and you're still young. We'll see.
What do you expect out of Marquise Lee? Hey, we don't know if he can stay healthy, but let's say he does. Okay, let's say when he comes back, he for the most part remains healthy for 16 games this year. What are you looking at? What kind of season are we going to see out of him?
If he stays healthy?
That's a big if.
You know, Marquise Lee's got some talent now. I mean, he's one of those guys, you know, that he makes you hold your breath. I mean, he has that ability after the catch. I mean, he's got some serious yak abilities, you know. And that's like, we can make that a new word, right? Here for the
yak ability, we just did.
Yak ability. You know, yards after catch.
Sure.
That's the acronym. You know, he is a special player with special abilities. He's still in the learning process, not only mentally, but I think physically as well. You know, the biggest adjustment, I think, to a lot of guys that when they come out of college and they come out of the pros that have never been hurt before have a hard time dealing with still performing and not being 100%. And at this level, nobody's 100%. That's just the way it is. You know, so you fight through it. So I think that part of it is that Marquise Lee has to learn to fight through some of that, but also he needs to have a little better streak of luck. And he is a very talented player. Is he a Dez Bryant, you know, Julio Jones? No. But he's one of those guys that when he touches the ball, he's got some specialness to him. So you're going to have a lot of patience with him. Now, the other concern that I would have as far as position groups is safety, because that position is still unsettled. You know, the inability to intercept the football last year is a major concern. You have to find a way, especially when you had 45 sacks. I mean, you're talking about a defense that was able to put some decent pressure on quarterbacks and only had 6 interceptions. Well, and offensively, you ended up throwing 18. So you were minus 12 in interception differential. That's not a good number. You know, you're Your sack differential with 71 sacks allowed on offense and 45 on defense was minus 26. So those two numbers have to change for this team to make a big jump.
They're trying to change the mindset, it seems like, of the corner, to tell them to be more aggressive. Give up a play occasionally if you can make some game-changing plays of your own, right? I mean, what is it that's going to increase that number? Is it just the better talent they're trying to put on the field? Is it better coaching, being in the right position?
On defense?
The corners. How are they going to come up with more interceptions?
Here's the biggest thing. How did offensive coordinators play you last year? Because your offense was averaging how many points a game? 15, 16?
15.6 is
okay.
What they ended
15,
up
16
on.
Points right. a game. Did they ever feel the pressing desire or the need to score points? Hell no. You know, so I think that the way that your offense plays will have a dramatic impact on your defense's ability to make plays simply by the offense being more effective, scoring more points, maybe having a lead for
get
one.
Get some leads
that would be
and
nice.
Have the other team being chased.
Where the offense
occasionally,
needs to
right?
play catch
yes.
up.
Yes.
You know, and it starts needing to, filling the need to be more aggressive with the football.
Scobie versus Myers, as you highlighted during the scrimmage, has been legitimate. Myers has tons of leg talent, as we like to say. I thought Scobie came out and made a statement the other night in mm-hmm. terms of his kickoffs. Obviously, his accuracy was there. Myers missed the one opportunity. He had plenty of leg, granted. Ultimately, fall on the side of Josh Scobie when it's all said and done, or still to be determined?
Well, let's see.
Okay.
You know, let's see how the remainder of the preseason goes. But, I mean, Josh Scobie definitely made a statement. The kickoffs were strong. He was consistent. He got good height on his kicks with the exception of the first one, which kind of went sideways spinning. But, look, the reality is Josh Scobie did not have a great year last year.
Right.
Did not. So this is a real competition. Jason Myers is a very talented young man. He's got a very icy demeanor about him. He's very confident. Now, how that plays out, we'll see. But, you know, the reality also is that Josh Scobie is not a young man anymore. He's in his 12th year. And if you're building to have a perennial contender, a perennial winner, how many years has Josh got left? How many Adam Vinatieris are there to where they just seem to be ageless?
Right, play forever.
But, you know, the caution in this is that you don't want to go Daryl Smith on Josh Scobie.
Right, right.
Okay, and end up turning Josh Scobie loose, and he's still got the ability to have seven more quality years.
Because if there is a position where you can do that, that's
it's
the
kicker.
One.
So, interesting battle.
We'll keep an eye on it.
Now, if all of a sudden the young man hit that 58-yarder the other night.
A little more interesting.
Absolutely, which I was hoping you would to make it interesting.
Right, let's make it interesting. All right, let's look at the fan feedback spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, asking fans what drives you today. We simply asked you, who's the most underrated player, in your opinion, in Jaguar team history? Tony, what kind of reaction did we get?
Here's what we got from Colby. He said Rasheen Mathis, Eric Greg Jones from Frank, John Henderson, debatably best defensive lineman in Jags history, never mentioned as all-time great. From Daniel, Greg Jones at fullback to help Taylor and MJD get the runs they are remembered for. From Ocho Ficho, would like to change my answer from Tony Brackens to Mo Williams. We'll allow that. From Cristiano, Tyson Alualu, being a top-10 pick in the same draft as him, who shall not be named, makes him judged harder. From Gabe, Montel Owens, our special teams unit has never been the same since. From the realist, I think David Garrard doesn't get the credit he deserves. He did a lot more with a lot less than most. From Black Dog, I always thought that Hardy Nickerson and Tommy Mack were underrated. Most all time, maybe not. From Isaiah, Daryl Smith. From Eric, Log said them all. Meyer was my first choice, followed by Daryl Smith. From Hardy Bro, Greg Jones, hands down the most underrated player in Jags history, a great person too. And from Bobby, Rob Meyer, Stroud and Henderson got a lot of credit, but Meyer gave us good depth at defensive tackle.
A lot of love for Greg Jones there, and rightly so. In my opinion, he was the best fullback in his era in the game, but didn't get the credit because the success or lack of success of the football team.
Overall, right.
You know, but dominant blocker, great awareness, great person. And it's been great to see Greg as one of the coaching interns through training camp. But a lot of people may not be aware that Greg is here and working with the running backs through training camp, trying to make, you know, life decisions. Is this something that I want to do? And it's great to talk to Greg because he's just a good man.
No surprise to anyone, he does not look like he's missed a workout.
No,
I don't think he's missed a day in lifting.
He he reminds me a lot of Irv Eatman, the guy that I play. He was an offensive tackle.
Sure he was. Back, you go back to the USFL days,
USFL
with the Philadelphia
with the Bulls,
Stars.
Or Stars, I mean. And Irv was one of those guys that didn't do a lot of lifting in the off season, would get popped on the steroid test every year, but it's not because he was taking steroids. He just had a freakishly high level, naturally, of testosterone in his body.
Sure.
I mean, he's one of those guys that I swear to you, you go to the weight room and he'd start doing some arm exercises, and you could literally see his arms grow from day to day. It was crazy. It was like, Irv, can we, like, you know, be like Frankenstein?
Can I have some of that?
And we can, like, do, like, blood transfusion and give me some of that? It was crazy.
All right, final question for you, and I think I know what the answer is to this one, but Chad Henne secures the backup. Stephen Morris, what are his chances of sticking around?
It's two quarterback roster. I mean, it is what
Chad's looked good. I think this offseason
he's looked good. He's had solid camp.
You know what you're going to get out of him.
And the thing that I liked about him during the game, he's managed the game very well. He missed an opportunity down the field. You know, the one thing that is very apparent is that Chad Henne's pocket presence just pales in comparison to Blake Bortles. And but that's okay. I mean, he's a dependable guy. You know, there's more weapons around Chad. And I made this point to you guys during a commercial break, and it helps Chad too. You could actually say that the second team offensive line right now is probably performing as good as the starting offensive line did last year. That's great progress from one year to the next. And this is not all sunshines and rainbows. This is what I'm telling you with my eyes. Because if you look at the offensive line, the second team, Sam Young, Austin Pastore, Stefan Wisniewski, A.J. Cannon, a high draft pick, and a developing Josh Wells, I mean, you've got essentially three guys that started, a high draft pick, and a guy that's developing very nicely that played some for the Jaguars. That offensive line, the second team offensive line, is playing as well as the starting group did last year at times.
Which is great for this year, but
Chad Henne.
Damn, does that say not much about last year's offensive line, right? I mean, you know, when in one off season you can change it to where your backups are better than your starters were.
But you compare that to the Pittsburgh Steelers second team offensive line, this team's got a better second team offensive line. This team is starting to develop depth
quality
at certain
depth.
Positions
yeah.
and quality depth.
Yeah. Jeff Loggeman, I don't know who's going to replace him, Tony, if he takes a Tuesday off, so we don't have that kind of quality depth around here.